As you've probably heard by now, 14 Democratic senators from the state of Wisconsin are on the lam, having fled a few weeks ago to nearby Illinois to avoid voting on a decidedly anti-union piece of legislation. Among other things, the bill would increase public employee contributions to pensions and health care and strip public unions of certain collective bargaining rights. Republican Governor Scott Walker has argued that the measures are needed in light of the state's ballooning budget shortfall. Meanwhile, tens of thousands of public employees took to the streets in protest. And so the standoff continues, with the Democrats standing in for the working man and the Republicans for fiscal responsibility. And what about the unions and their, you know, executives and leaders? And what's the word I'm looking for? Oh, right. Bosses.
Barack Obama is preparing a billion-dollar campaign. With his record, he'll spend every penny. Families are struggling, state budgets have run dry, and the federal debt is skyrocketing. But Obama and the union bosses are standing in the way of economic reform, intimidating taxpayers, leaving classrooms empty. They made this mess. Let's clean it up. Stop Obama and his union bosses today.
That was a Republican National Committee ad released this week, which used the phrase union bosses to imply corrupt bullies, a once common term in anti-union rhetoric. Only this time around, that RNC ad seems to be an exception. Much of the local and even national coverage has been sympathetic to the public employees, which, according to Nelson Lichtenstein, ain't how it used to be. Lichtenstein is the director of the Center for the Study of Work, Labor, and Democracy at the University of California, Santa Barbara, and he says that unions have historically had something of an image problem.
In the past, when there was a strike or even worse, some scandal, media sort of jumped on that in a fairly negative way. A strike, whether it was for good reasons or bad, disrupts other people, disrupts life, and that's a negative. The strike of the professional air traffic controllers in 1981, which Ronald Reagan jumped on, generated a lot of negative coverage. Some of the same arguments, you know, they're getting paid too much and they should be happy with what they have. And that set off a chain reaction in the private sector, largely in the 1980s, of managements taking a hard line against unions.
According to a Pew study in August 1981, 59% of the public apparently agreed with Reagan that it was worth shutting down the air traffic controllers. But in Wisconsin, a recent Pew study suggests that a wide majority of people support the Wisconsin unions.
Right, and the difference is this. Reagan was elected sort of decisively and moved against these 11,000 relatively small group of workers who had tried to shut down the entire air transportation system. In Wisconsin, there isn't a strike. There hasn't been a strike. And furthermore, we're dealing with a much larger group of workers. Many of them, of course, people know very intimately, and therefore the situation's reversed.
So you're saying part of the reason the coverage generally has been much more positive is because these are friends and neighbors. These are people that we're more likely to know. You also suggest that it's very telegenic.
Well, yes, because you have these crowds. And, you know, any photograph of them or clip of them shows all sorts of ordinary people, many women, of course, many young people, but also policemen and firefighters and Green Bay Packers, you know, who are out there with these school teachers and social workers and home health care workers. So there's kind of this unusual and across the entire population sort of grouping there.
You mentioned that the traditional demonization of unions and labor hasn't worked or been employed much this time. For example, you don't really hear the term union boss being thrown around that much.
Well, right. One could plausibly use that phrase, although I think incorrectly, when you had union leaders and managers sitting in a closed room, you know, cutting a deal, and that's sort of the essence of collective bargaining. But when you have 50,000 people or more every day out in the streets, the phrase union boss doesn't compute unless you're Gaddafi or something and you think that the uprising is purely a product of a conspiracy of your enemies. It's clear that this has a genuine democratic popular flavor to it, and whether the union leaders want it or not, it's taken place. So I think that has changed some of the rhetoric of the conservatives.
Certainly the phrase has been used in the past, in fact, only a couple of years ago by the Chamber of Commerce, right?
That's right. And the contrast is striking. 2 years ago, when Obama first came in, there was a big push by the labor movement and the Democrats to pass a new bill called the Employee Free Choice Act, which would have made union organizing easier. And the Chamber of Commerce and other business groups spent a lot of money on ads on TV, demonizing the union leaders as labor bosses and sort of thuggish on the grounds that they were going to eliminate the election that workers would have to decide whether they wanted a union or not. And so that was actually fairly successful from the point of view of the conservatives. Clearly in Wisconsin, one can't demonize the leadership of the trade unions because you can't sort of order 50,000 people to go out in the street.
These are not automatons. You mentioned Gaddafi. These are not people who have had hallucinogens put in their Nescafe.
That's correct, yes.
Talk to me a little bit about pop culture, because when I think of how unions are generally depicted mm-hmm. on TV and in the movies mm-hmm. and The Wire, mm-hmm. The Sopranos, mm-hmm. they don't come off too well.
No, they don't. There has been this level of rhetoric and discourse for really a century, which I think quite unfairly puts the phrase boss next to the democratically elected office holder who heads a union. You know, bosses are autocratic figures. More rightly, you'd call a CEO a boss. You'd call Bill Gates a boss. I think that's part of what seeped into the culture, and I think it reflects the viewpoint of a large section of certainly businessmen and others who think that unions ipso facto are illegitimate, and therefore the only way they exist is because union leaders, union bosses, are putting one over on their own membership.
So is a film like Norma Rae the exception that proves the rule?
Yes, it is. Norma Rae was a study of a heroic union organizing drive. But the movie ended at the moment of sort of victory when the union was certified. If the movie had continued for another 3 years, you would have found all the messy details of how to organize a contract, internal conflicts, managers saying, you want too much, you're going to put me out of business. Norma Rae number two would have had a different flavor than Norma Rae number one.
Would you say you're objective on the issue of unions?
Well, I would say that I'm a historian who has seen and understood that the development of democracy in any nation, in any part of the world, is almost always, or is always, joined at the hip with the rise of institutions that represent the working class in some organized fashion.
Nelson, thank you very much.
You're welcome indeed.
Nelson Lichtenstein is the director of the Center for the Study of Work, Labor, and Democracy at the University of California, Santa Barbara.
Norma, you got the biggest mouth in this mill. Give us a longer break. Give us more smoking time.
Do it. Now shut up.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.